All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to the ICAT Task Force. Of the members, we have Alex Goff, Alexis Snyder, Anil Jain, Denise Webb, Rich Landon, and Sasha Termott. I do know that a few individuals, Andy, Deb, Ram, said they may be a little late. And unfortunately, Cheryl is not with us, so I will turn it over to Alex to get us started. And I'll just quickly ask, have I missed anyone in the roll call? Okay. All right, Alex, it's all yours.
Well, thank you so very much, Lauren. Could we go to, yep, awesome. So our agenda lineup for today, now that we've completed roll call and welcome, is to do a brief recap from last week's meeting. We're going to move into the recommendations discussion. There was one area remaining for us to tackle, and we actually have an additional one related to a data model that we're going to discuss today in addition to continuous improvement. We're then going to present some of our thinking related to the report draft writing plans and the convergence conversation and how we'll be framing up the intersection of clinical and administrative data portion of our task force work now that we're bringing the prior authorization detailed discussions to a wrap. We'll conclude with public comment and next steps. So if we could... Thank you. So let's go ahead and recap our last meeting. I want to really do a big shout out to Jim and Josh, who presented a data classes and standards document, really synthesizing the work of the data class and related standards discussions. They presented it in terms, a new table in terms of availability, adoption rates, and usefulness. This will be very helpful as we move forward into the report writing efforts. We also discussed some gaps in the standards, variation in coverage of data classes and adoption, and some implications related to the task force recommendations. Following that robust discussion and recap from Jim and Josh, we moved into recommendations brainstorming. We focused on designing for the future. There was a straw man from which we launched the discussion, thanks to the small working group, who put forth some very clear thoughts around we need to craft recommendations to what we think is right, even if they're hard or will take on some challenging issues. I was personally very pleased to see the level of support and from the full task force in regards to a number of the recommendations that we reviewed related to the standards floor, a unified process for standards advancement, and leveraging the interoperability standards advisory framework to support convergence, and the overall need to align national standards framework to support clinical and administrative needs. We found ourselves quickly sliding from the prior authorization focus to the larger intersection conversation, which is a natural pivot at this point in time. We also then continued to have some discussion around real-world need for some separation between clinical and administrative data and how that's been slightly artificial to date and how we're going to reduce burden as we move forward. Any questions on that last meeting recap? All right, seeing no hands. If we'll go to the next one, what we're going to do now is we're going to pivot to a working document that we've had on Google Docs that has been the landing zone for the guiding principles, ideal state, and overall recommendations brainstorming. Hopefully everyone is able to see my screen. I'm displaying the document, and to help us focus in, I've got the two key areas for today. In orange, we're going to talk about continuous improvement. The small working group did meet after last week's task force meeting, so we have a few recommendations for your review and consideration as a launch-off point for that section. Then we want to talk about a data model. This is a topic that my co-chair Cheryl had introduced, this concept of aligning towards a federal health architecture or some sort of a data model that would support us with bringing clinical and administrative data together. So that would be the second area that I'd like to spend time brainstorming today before we pivot into reports, writing, and convergence conversations. So without trying to make you all dizzy, I'm going to scroll down to the continuous improvement section of the document. This is, as I noted, new content. It was produced last, I think it was, believe it or not, just Thursday from the small working group. The concept of continuous improvement as a guiding principle was underscored by the ideal state framework of payers having an established process for regularly reviewing and communicating the services and medications that require prior auth and eliminate requirements for therapies no longer warranting them. The payer review and communication processes will have established predictable cadence, such as the CPT annual update process. So that's the ideal state that we're working towards. We came up with two high-level recommendations for your consideration and evolution today. The first one is related to, first one is A, leverage HEDIS and STAR ratings and other industry vehicles to expand yearly review to be industry-wide and related sharing of policy born date. The expectation is that the last review date should not exceed a year review periodicity, which is the norm for plans that are accredited. So this is really talking about how do we leverage plan ratings and quality ratings to really help us have some teeth related to ensuring that there is an industry norm for reviewing a prior authorization policy and that we know when that policy was actually born, when it was created, and subsequently that it's being reviewed on a regular basis. To support our discussion, I think I'll stop at this one to see if there's any questions on recommendation A. Okay. Seeing no questions, I'm going to go ahead and move on to item B, which is a recommendation to establish through CMS and ONC authorities a deadline for industry to build in codification into health IT tools, such as order management tools, e-prescribing tools, electronic health records, practice management systems, and case management systems. So what we're trying to do here is to force the codification in the data capture tools that support clinical administrative data purposes downstream. We noodled on whether or not to evolve the codification of data to enable automation and how to capture the needs for codification, such as trust and friction considerations of requiring proof today. These are the two straw man recommendations for continuous improvement for a learning health system. Have we gone far enough to really create our ideal state related to continuous improvement? Sasha.
What do we mean by built-in codification?
What do we mean by built-in codification? I believe what we mean by that is, and I see Jocelyn's hand went up, so she may want to chime in here as well. Is that what you're answering or asking a question, Jocelyn?
No, I was going to, it was my commentary, so I thought I'd speak to it.
Please.
So I think the concept here, Sasha, was one of the challenges we've had over on the prior auth side is while we've gotten folks to take their existing question sets and put them into an electronic format, we've essentially digitized forms. We haven't really fully taken advantage of the yielded data in the EHR as much as we can. So the idea of it being codifiable just means that it's able as individual data points to be acted upon as opposed to sort of a blob or a document type of transport so we can make it more interactive.
I think my worry about the way the straw man is drafted here is that to some extent, This is already an expectation of ONC certification program. For example, the certification program has long had the expectation that diagnoses would be coded against NOMED, or that e-prescriptions are written in a structured format with Rx norm codes associated, or that lab results have a LOINC code. And so I don't know, if we put B into our straw man, I don't know what we're describing there that's new and different in a way that could actually be enforced or acted upon as a recommendation by CMS or ONC. I think we would have to be more clear and likely more specific about what data and what code sets we were feeling were lacking in the current programs for that to be a really effective recommendation.
I think that's a really important point. And I think part of what we're seeing is, I think the bar is already higher for the data that's at rest in the EHR, and the data that's based on the existing administrative transactions doesn't have that same level of expectation on it.
So then maybe we need to adjust the systems listed in B to acknowledge that this is already an expectation of ONC certification for EHRs, but is more of a problem for other systems?
I'm gonna leave it to the folks that understand the policy side better than I do about whether or not we would need to call that out.
Okay, so I'm trying to edit on the fly here, folks, in response to this thoughtful discussion. So established through CMS and ONC authorities, a deadline for industry to build in codification into health IT tools beyond those which are currently governed by the Certified Health IT Product Program. What's it called? Program. Sasha, am I getting at it?
Yes, I think that's helpful. One other thing I think we've learned from ONC's certification program in the past is that it has a detrimental effect on usability if the requirement is written in an unintentionally overprescriptive way. And what we really want is for the data to be accessible for interoperability purposes, not actually dictate how it's necessarily captured. For example, smoking status was a source of much revision in past ONC certification policy because some of the initial certification requirements required a very prescriptive capture, which was less detailed and perhaps less useful than different systems had evolved on their own. And of course, it was important to have ways to standardly express smoking status across systems. But it doesn't matter if a system supports a more granular capture, as long as they could map to that standard expectation when exchanging with another system. And I think we would want that same principle here. Our intention is not to limit the way data might be captured in different systems where different tools might be more applicable to one specialty or another. The goal would be to identify the sort of minimum necessary set to exchange for interoperability purposes that meet our needs for prior authorization and other flows without interfering any more than is necessary with the data capture. Does that make sense?
So it's a balancing act between the data capture dynamics and the systems capabilities? I'm not sure I'm hearing you right, Sasha. I'm trying to make sure I've got my arms around what you're asking.
I think when we write policy goals, we want to articulate them as what's necessary for interoperability to meet our use case of streamlined prior authorization, for example. We want to avoid being overly prescriptive about what type of data would need to be captured or how it's captured, as long as the data is available for the interoperability purposes that we need.
Sasha, I'm not sure I'm understanding your, like, what you're asking me to do or trying to get us to consider as a modification or maybe as a whole new addition.
I think I would just change the phrasing where it says build in codification. I don't know what that means, kind of to my earlier point. I think that's a very ambiguous phrase. I think what we want to say is to support interoperable exchange, not build in codification.
Yeah. I'm getting a ton of background noise. I'm not sure if that's on my line and apologize or if anyone else is picking up on that. To ensure interoperability.
Or interoperable exchange.
Because I think the whole point here is that we want to make sure that as much gets captured and then translated from the way we speak to the codification that really underpins interoperable exchange. So is...
I think the fear of what we've learned from the past certification, though, is that if we write a policy that's overly prescriptive about how data is captured, it can have a really detrimental effect on usability and the possibility to be flexible with that across different specialties or settings or use cases. So I think the goal we should express here is that certain data is important to have in a standardized, codified, for example, format for interoperability for this use case. And if certain systems don't support that, that's a priority of ours. But I actually think it would be really detrimental to specify a policy about how data has to be captured.
I don't think that was what we were trying to do. I think we were trying to say, once you get the data, you need to be able to make sure it can be codified so that it can actually be interoperable and shared. So I think what you're trying to do is also, I think we all should be mindful that everybody does their job a little bit differently, but we can still get to the same outcomes. And it's how you have that ability to work with the tools on your desktop to enable those interoperable exchanges are going to be underpinned by codification of data. So as the modifications that I've made in item B, does that address your, because what I hear is more of a concern about, don't tell me how I have to do my job and enter information from that patient-provider interaction into some system, or if I've got some other ancillary system, beyond order management like case management, how that job is done, just make sure that the data that I've captured in that job is interoperable, and that ties to codification.
I think that makes sense. And I think what we have drafted, the revisions accomplish what I was trying to express.
Got it. Okay. So looks like, so thank you, Sasha, for confirming. I think we've got, at least we've addressed your two concerns, and I've just lost my connection. Yay. And it says, okay, I guess I'm coming back in now. All right. Hopefully you guys can still see my systems, or Excel can tell me what I need to do once Adobe relaunches for me, what I should do. And maybe in the interim, Steve Brown can chime in. Or have you lost me altogether?
Can you hear me?
Steve?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, my God. I think as someone that's spent an awful lot of time with these standards and meaningful use, I think you need to be very careful about the overestimating the coverage of standards for real semantic interoperability. Just because a lab test has a link name doesn't mean that there is sufficient standard for transmitting the data with in a useful way. There are all kinds of lab fields that are not well covered by standards, for example. So I think it needs to be done very carefully. The next thing that I'd like to bring up is orders. Like, orders are a completely different animal, right? And just because you can name a lab test or name a medication, there's all kinds of other information that needs to be looked at with equal vigor. And I think that these need to be done on a case, look through a data element, like a medications by data element, with a careful eye towards, are the standards really adequate for what we are thinking we're going to do with the data? And I think we're going to find that there's some significant gaps.
So what you're saying is that we think that we have really good code sets and ability to be specific in our information that we're exchanging, but you're really saying that the underpinning terminologies and vocabularies or related standards won't meet our needs.
I'm saying that we may find gaps in absolutely necessary related standards. So the way I try to explain it to my administrative superiors is that we have it's like we have the marquee item in the domain. Like we have Rx norm. Isn't that great? But look at all the other components of a medication order or a medication dispensation, right? We have LOINC for lab test names. That's great. But the results, they're wild, right? I mean, if you can say plus, 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 or you can say 3+ for, white cells in the urine. And there's any number of examples like that.
I think that you're getting a lot of support for those comments based upon the chat box. Would you think that we need to have a straw man recommendation related to this?
What I would suggest is that we try to figure out for a given use case, for a data domain, maybe the recommendation is we go for a particular type of data and recommend that additional analysis of gaps in standards necessary for semantic interoperability be undertaken.
I'm going to hopefully scroll this up again, move this down. So I think this is separate as I look at as I think about your comment, it seems to me that we could benefit from advancing some work around terminologies and vocabularies. If we want to get to codification, we're forever going to be in the situation I think that you described, which is it is where it is today, but we can always make it better.
Well, that's one way to put it, but I think you're in trouble if you start demanding codification to standards that are incomplete for the job. Right?
I think you've sold us all on that point. So I'm trying to translate that, Steve, to what does that mean from our recommendations perspective? And if you're not sure, that's fine. I feel like it's highly actionable, and I've got a queue of people raising their hands right behind you because I think they may want to have some comments on this.
Let's stir the pot. I'll stop.
I was
having kittens, so I had to say it.
Okay. So I see Rich, Jocelyn, and Anil all put their hands up, and I thought I saw Tom Mason's hand up a minute ago, but so I'm looking for those who want to comment on the specific item from Steve before introducing an additional item. Rich?
Yeah, I want to support both Steve's and Sasha's points in that our recommendations, I think, are in the right direction, but we've got to be at a point where we specify what codified data we want out of the system and, to Sasha's point, not specify how it gets in there. So we need to be a little bit more specific than saying this stuff needs to be interoperable, but we can't get overly prescriptive about how industry creates the codified data or where they create it. That's got to be up to whoever the developer is. And, to Steve's point, yes, there are innumerable gaps in data or in standards, and I think that is really beyond our scope. So I like the approach that we're taking, that we as the ICAD or eventually HITECH don't need to solve that, but we format our recommendation in such a way is that we actually task ONC, to look into the feasibility of what codified data elements are there standards for, and ONC's got, you know, a long history of doing that exact thing, and then to apply that specifically toward the prior auth, and then more generically toward the convergence of administrative clinical data. So we're actually recommending a glide path more than a solution. Thanks.
Jocelyn.
I actually just agree with everything Rich just said, and I think that just acknowledging that that work needs to be done so we don't sound Pollyanna-ish, I think is incredibly important. But I think we are where we are. And so, sort of avoiding our past mistakes, but identifying, and I think it's out of our scope, identifying that this work needs to be done and that people need to be identified to make this work happen for real. But I think that, to me, there's a pause between saying everyone must do it the same way or have the same rules versus this is the subset of data that's required around a particular disease state or, regime is where that expertise needs to be applied to make sure that the standards are fit for purpose for the work that we're doing. So it's going to take investment from those SME areas to make sure that we can get to that desired end state. I wouldn't want us to think that we can't start today knowing that there's work to be done versus it continuing to be a blocker on making any progress. Because I think that's been one of the big challenges with the 278 is it's so broad and so flexible to meet everyone's needs that the rules to use it have never been sufficient enough to get people to the consistency to actually make it work in an automated fashion.
Yeah, it's actually a really good example because in the prior authorization, Jocelyn, because there's an internal code set to X12 for the generic messaging, and then it expands out and it actually in more robust capabilities for prior auth, you can use the LOINC codes. So that could be how we could tie that in to kind of build on Rich's idea about applying to PA, HI to LOINC. Code values, and then the broader intersection glide path.
And I think this gives us a great place to point out where some of the existing business models around code sets are challenging.
Oh, okay. So let me translate that to there can be cost implications and accessibility to code sets that are barriers.
That sounds great.
Okay. Consider.
And Alex, I apologize. If I have to drop for a little bit, I'll be back.
Okay. Okay. So pursue options for industry-wide access to code sets. I thought we sort of already had this before. I think potentially under real time and automation. Okay, so I'm just going to make that a note. And Anil, you've been very patient.
No problem. So agree with everything that's been said. And the way that I'm thinking through this, that you guys can sort of tell me if I got this wrong. I think we're all saying that we're going to push for existing code sets. That we want to leverage and maybe expand them to those use cases, but we also want to identify those gaps that may exist and then have ONC figure that those gaps out and then invest in them. But we also want to recognize the semantic challenges that existing code sets may have in the use cases that we're describing. And as a clinician, I can tell you there are plenty of aspects of where sometimes picking up the phone and talking is probably the right answer instead of having two technical systems interact. So we do have to recognize that because there are semantic limitations, there could be unintended consequences of having this sort of an automated technical exchange of information that makes a decision or adjudicates a decision about a specific patient. So going back to that 80-20 rule that we've been discussing as a group, we want to make sure that the vast majority of use cases are covered, but that the semantic limitations will probably require us to deviate from some sort of automation in that 20% of cases that we've been alluding to. So what I'm suggesting is acknowledging that there are semantic limitations, even if the code sets were perfect, and acknowledge that there could be unintended consequences if we are not investing and understanding the semantic limitations carefully enough, because it's just too easy in a busy practice to let things be automatic without picking up the phone or having, you know, human-to-human interaction that somehow, in some cases, may have prevented some issues in the past. So I love the idea of pushing for codified standards, but that semantic aspect of it needs to be acknowledged in this group.
I tried to capture a note there, Anil, about be careful of semantic limitations and unintended consequences in business busy practices. Not sure that's where you wanted me to capture that.
I wasn't looking at the screen, so let me see if I could quickly look at it. I think the most important thing is that semantic limitations can introduce unintended consequences as we move towards automation. You know, we had in the past a poor man's, you know, way of preventing bad things from happening, although it wasn't perfect, which was two people would speak to each other.
You're being asked to give an example, I believe, by Steve
Brown. Sure. So let's take a complicated patient with rheumatoid arthritis who has tried a few different medications. And sudden, I as a clinician is recommending that the patient be put on a perhaps a more expensive, but a different type of medication. Oftentimes, you're asked by that the patient has tried X, Y, and Z before. And sometimes that could be codified to Sasha's point earlier, that there could be you know, this patient was on this medication or that medication, but it could be that the clinician is making a decision based on drug classes. And in the past, you would pick up the phone and speak to somebody that you can explain why it's not a good idea for us to try A, B, and C and move right to the choice, which may not happen if we rely solely on data, which doesn't capture, because of all the reasons we've already articulated, the full semantic understanding of the patient's condition. And I just lost the connection. Am I still on?
I hear you.
Okay.
For sure. Very clear.
I lost the meeting, the online Adobe meeting, but that's okay. But yeah, so
it'll come back. If not, exit out and it'll come back and right where you left off. I was surprised how easily it worked today.
Yeah, not a problem. While I do that, I'll just quickly say that specialists, I'm a primary care doc when I do practice, but specialists probably have tons of examples where the data does not capture all the criteria that would be required to do auto adjudication. And to the points made earlier, ICD-10 is not granular enough in some cases or too granular in other cases to be any good for this kind of purpose. So I think prior auth is a great example of where we run into a semantic challenge with code sets, because we're trying to get a system to make a decision about a real person who can't be represented with just codes.
I'm hoping that example provides context for you, Steve. I noticed that you've used an X. It looks like you're disagreeing with the earlier comment. I'm not sure if that was intentional or raising your hand.
That was old. But I guess what I would say is I see two different things here. One is that ICD-10 is not sufficiently granular, and it's a classification system, and we all know that, and that's a good discussion to have. The other thing is, so then the other case is that the drug classes are inadequate, and that may be a standards problem. And I think there's a third instance where the case is simply too complicated to express using any sort of reasonably understandable information.
Right. I agree with that.
So I think this is good commentary. It looks like Alexis is agreeing with it with a similar example in her own world. And I think that as we move forward with crafting recommendations, we need to take this into account either as its own kind of commentary, like recommendation, or maybe it's just part of the commentary that we'll add in when discussing a recommendation. I'm not seeing any further hands up. And so I'd like to, in the remaining time that we have on the recommendations discussion, move down to the data models. So one of the things that...
Anil, please go ahead. I just want to make a quick comment. I think one of the challenges that, and again, I'm a very part-time practitioner these days, but one of the things that we don't do a great job of around from an informatics point of view is we don't capture in codified form the decision-making process. Yes, we have codes for diagnoses and procedures and medications, but we don't know how to codify the branching logic that a clinician and a patient working together may have used to make the decisions. So as much as we want to emphasize using codes, until we have a better way of codifying decision-making, we're always going to have that gap. And so this way, policymakers and patient advocacy groups, docs and payers and plans don't misunderstand that we're not going to have a perfect automated system until we can codify the decision-making process, which doesn't exist in any meaningful form in healthcare. Even best practice alerts and decision support tools don't fully address it.
Any comments or thoughts on Anil's input? Okay, seeing some chat box, but no one's raising their hand. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the data model discussion. The reason I want to move on to this is that because we've been, Cheryl introduced an idea of this concept of needing a data model. I think it was emerging from some of the data classes and categories discussion, and that there was some anticipated discussion around this week of what kind of data model, or is there a data model? And as we've been looking into this in Cheryl's absence, it seems to some of us within the ONC sphere, in our research, that we may be bringing ourselves back to this concept of FHIR as potentially the data model we want to be exploring, that there is, in the FAST Healthcare Interoperability Resources, the standard, the internationally based standard of Health Level 7 has the capacity to handle administrative data as well as clinical data, and that I think it's clearly understood that the financial management aspects inside the HL7 standard may not be fully baked in to the FHIR standard, but that there is a strong linkage when you look at EHR records, the convergence of data kind of objectives, that USCDI and the use of the US core version of FHIR could be a logical place for us to work at bringing a data model together for clinical and administrative data. As such, I'm throwing this out there as, should this data model idea be a category? Potentially it's part of the real-time and automation item, but we haven't discussed this aspect of how do we get clinical and admin data models to come together, and what's a logical approach to that? would folks propose that we look to FHIR to be the grounding model for data?
This is Steve. I have a couple of comments. So I think that a data model is absolutely essential for exchanging data in a consistent and interpretable way. There's always an intersection, there's a tension between the intersection of a terminology model and an information model. Nevertheless, it's essential, and there should be some recommendations or some eye towards recognizing that it's the two go together and neither can stand alone. One of the problems with FHIR as a data model is it's often not very strongly tied to the terminology model. And it's,
I'm sorry, it's not very strong to what? You broke up there, Steve.
To the terminology model, right? So you need an information model,
okay.
A terminology model that's bound to it as sort of your entry price for, just the entry price of semantic interoperability. There are the folks who are experts in this area, and maybe we'd want to get one of them to educate us a little bit. FHIR is, I think, oversold in terms of out of the box ability to do that, and it's also by domain not necessarily internally consistent. And you can also
when you say domain, do you mean domains within healthcare, or do you mean domains as in multiple lines of business, not necessarily just within healthcare?
I mean, across FHIR resources, it's not always consistent.
Okay.
Right. So if you want to, if you have an observation and you have a thing and you want to say that it's not true, or you want to express laterality or something like that, it's not always done in the same way. There are absolute weaknesses. It's very popular, and it's still rising on the hype curve. But I think there are significant challenges that would need to be understood before simply endorsing them. Another thing to consider is a statement model. What a statement model is a type of small information model that's used to make statements about the occurrence of an event about a patient. So right now, HL7 has examples of those as well, and they are not inconsistent at all with FHIR. So I wouldn't immediately throw out, for instance, the FIM, which is a very large, wide-scoped information model, and say that FHIR is going to solve all of what the FIM could do, because it won't.
Did you say SIM or RIM? Because you're on the cell phone and I'm losing a little bit of the quality there in understanding if you said like the reference information model of HL7 or something else.
No, I'll put it in the chat box. It's the FIM, the Federal Health Information Model.
Okay, yes. Because the Federal Health Information Model, so let's talk about that a little bit. You want to maybe give us a little bit of what is the Federal Health Information Model for folks?
I'm not going to give I only know people that have worked on it. But what the Federal Health Information Model is a UML information model that describes and interrelates all kinds of different important nouns and verbs and relationships in healthcare. Let's see. There's a ton of modeling work that's been done, and you can go, it's all for it.
But I think that you're touching upon some of the research that some of us did in the last week to try to, because we thought Cheryl might be back today and she had some ideas around this, and that we're not really seeing a robust federal health information or federal health architecture team in place anymore. So there had been historical information. So I think what we probably need to do is think about this conversation from a higher level sort of recommendation perspective, which is we need someone to go figure this a data model out. And maybe we don't want to make it at the fire level.
Right. But you shouldn't just do it because fire is cool. You should do it knowing the limitations.
We should do what's right.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so I'm going to think that we need to evolve a recommendation at a higher level of thinking for data model aiding convergence aspect. And I'm going to put a placeholder on this, and we can come back to it. What I'd like to do is go ahead and pivot. I'm not seeing any hands up, and I apologize if I've missed somebody raising their hand. Doesn't appear that anybody has. So what I'd like to do is I would like to pivot on our agenda. So I'm going to stop sharing, I think. There are magic hands at play to help us pivot to the next section, which is to talk about the report draft writing plans. And so I think Michael Witte and I are going to tag team, likely with some support of Lauren as well. I think what we want to do is start to introduce to you our thinking of the report writing effort, sort of the timelines, and what that means to us as we move forward with our meeting schedule and offline work that we've been advancing. And so I believe at this point we're going to start to see Michael Witte's desktop or his slide from him. And hopefully he's going to be able to make that a little bigger.
And you'll see it at all?
I can see it. It's beautiful.
So that's the first one.
Okay,
beginning.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you if you could zoom in a little bit.
Okay. So what we want to do is start on the first, is this the first slide?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to have to make my screen large so that I can see this. Let me do it this way. Because it's pretty tiny. Okay, there we go. I just moved it to my other monitor.
I've got it maximized, really, so this is all I can see. So yell at me if somebody's typing a comment.
All right, I can do that now because I can now see comments because of the way I pivoted my screen. So what I'd like to do is get rid of that Microsoft search command option, if we could do that somehow. We have put together to present to you today an outline of the next, is it 2 months, possibly 3 months of our work. We would like to, today, we want to present to you what we think is the calendar forecast so that we can get your feedback. We would like on Thursday to kick off a report synthesizing group. And what I mean by a synthesizing group is that there are folks who have been involved in small working teams, and we've been bringing that work back for discussions and iterations with the full task force. We'd like to have those, we've engaged in outreach and have folks who are willing to help us with synthesizing the work that we've done so far into content that could go into a master report. We are envisioning that the efforts of synthesizing will enable us to be ready for the anticipated arrival of an editor that can help us with one voicing and smoothing out the final report draft that we are going to produce to present to HITECH in early September. The editor, you'll notice as we get further into this outline, is not expected into the middle of August. As such, we've got a plan to do parallel work of synthesizing efforts to date while we, as a full task force, pivot to the broader intersection discussion. In in working with Cheryl and with Lauren, it's clear that the HITECH Federal Advisory Committee has sort of three lenses that they leverage or use as a result of their 21st century cures genesis. And they're tied to interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access. These are three high-level buckets, categories, if you will, of thinking that we would like to use in helping us pivot from the prior authorization-focused discussion to stepping back and saying, what haven't we talked about that we need to so that this report really puts a line in the sand and can help us have a pivot in the industry? It's also envisioned that we may be able to use those three categories of interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access as a higher level framing in our report. So as such, we propose that for the next three weeks of task force calls, that we hold three separate discussions focused around those three categories, and then wrap up our thoughts about those three categories and the broader intersection discussion on August 18th. Meanwhile, the offline synthesizing teams would be summarizing the efforts to date, and we'd start to get content ready to go into a template document. We believe we can create a Google document to help us with that initial compilation work so that when the editor comes, they will have a launch-off point to create a clean document and one voice our work, enabling us to pivot the full task force discussion on August 25th to the draft presentation that Cheryl and I should present to the full HITECH on September 9th. We'll talk about that on August 25th and then be working offline to complete the slides and a draft report. On September 1st, we'd like to talk about the draft report review. September 8th, we'd like to share the final HITECH materials we intend to deliver on September 9th. When we want to present, during a HITECH meeting, the draft recommendations, and then ask for feedback from HITECH on the report, so that we could then, in September, later part of September, be working with this team as needed to update and revise that report as necessary, ultimately leading to our final deliverable to HITECH October 21st, and we would present and deliver that officially then. That is a high-level plan, and I'm going to stop there to see if there's any questions. I am not seeing any questions on that, nor chat boxes, so I hope my Adobe has not frozen. Could we go to the next slide, Michael? Again, can we somehow get rid of that box? Oh no. Maybe if you go to slide mode as opposed to...
Maybe, is that better?
No, I don't know. Microsoft Search is disabled is all I keep seeing, and maybe that's on my screen. It's on my screen, so I apologize. All right, that was a user error. Okay, it's a fun day in HITECH land. So let's now talk a little bit about ICAD task force agendas. Okay. If we start to put the pieces of the puzzle together using, I just lost Michael's screen. Michael, did you use?
No, is it back? Oh, I lost connection. Let me reshare that. Okay, can folks see it?
It's coming back as you speak.
You
there
can
we
see
go.
It?
I can. We're good. Okay.
Yay.
So, well, all right. So, just flip back one slide for me. So, I walked through this first slide, and this is sort of the big picture. So, now if we go to the next slide, what does that big picture timeline really mean to getting the report content synthesized and crafted? What that means is that offline we've got, you'll see on this that we'll have each of the meetings that we know we have slated between now and the HITACH presentation on September 9th with interim rows reflecting the things that we want to tackle in the report or the work that we have yet to do in the sense of the broader discussion conversation that we want to frame around interoperability, privacy, security, and patient access. And that there will be a cadence of doing some offline work, bringing it back to the task force, getting feedback, and then iterating it into the master document. Ultimately getting back to a full task force review of content, leading us up to the point of being able to have a compiled report, hopefully the end of August, very beginning of September, that the task force members will be able to review front to back. Michael or Lauren, do you have any other commentary to add, round out this discussion?
No, I think you covered it.
Are there any questions? Rich Landon.
Yeah, it's very ambitious, but good job. It seems to be what we need to get us to where we need to be by when we need to be there. Just a quick comment. The August 25th meeting date, there is an NCVHS hearing that date, so that means that Alex, myself, and Deb Strickland will probably not be available to ICAD. I don't see the three of us as making or breaking the task force discussion, but I did want to call that out just in case that was a concern to others.
Yeah, and I don't believe that Jackie Munson will be at that hearing for us. So as an NCVHS member, maybe she can be, you know, as a participant in this group, she can maybe be here. But I agree with you. I communicated to Lauren that we have the CAQH core hearing on prior authorization and connectivity rules on the 25th and 26th, so we would not be available that day. And so we're envisioning Cheryl will be back and will facilitate that session. On a similar note, I won't be here next week because I'm actually going to try to take some time off. See if that happens. I do think, to your point, Rich, that this is aggressive, very assertive timeline, and that I am extraordinarily grateful and appreciative of those folks that have accepted my invitation to play, such as yourself, Rich, and Alexis, and Anil, and Jim, and Jocelyn, and like Deb's already working on the gaps. I know I'm leaving a few people out there. We're also doing some additional outreach to folks that can help us with providing some general guidance and kind of perspectives, because sometimes a couple of us are too in the weeds, so we've enrolled a few folks to help us keep it at the right level. There is more room, more than enough room for everybody to play in this. So if you would like to be a part of the crafting, synthesizing effort, please know that you are more than welcome to come to the party. Okay. So I think that we've just wrapped up that discussion. If there's no other questions, what we will do is we did not distribute this in advance because we thought you might have some comments on it. So we can go ahead and I think we should probably get that out to everybody so you can have it at your fingertips, or we'll have nothing else included as an attachment in our standard, the next deck that we send out, since this is really upgrading the next step slides.
I tested.
Pardon?
Hmm.
I just think that's
I've lost Adobe.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
But I'll send that around.
All right. Yeah, we can talk about it in the debrief meeting later today, Michael. I think just putting it in the new deck will probably be easier for attendees as opposed to sending additional interim documents. I also think that when we have some folks get together on Thursday to talk about the actual synthesizing effort and what those activities might look like and the sprints we want to go through, we might have some home thinking. So I'd like to have a little bit of noodling time between now and the next meeting so we can iterate those accordingly. All right, so one of the things that I was hoping to do today was to introduce this idea of the three areas. We realized after we designed the slides that I had to kind of talk about the convergence conversation in the overall timeline kind of walkthrough. But for a number of you, you are on HITACH as full members, and you probably have seen this concept of the interoperability, patient access, and privacy and security framing. And so I'm really curious to hear from folks how you know, as we want to pivot from having this prior authorization, very heads-down focused discussion, to the broader kind of intersection conversation, you know, there was some back and forth that we had internally about how best to frame that. How do we go in from this heads down discussion to the broader discussion? And so we thought these three categories of privacy, security, interoperability, and patient access could be good ways to help us think about the broader conversation. Is this framing resonating for folks? I wanted to get some feedback on that to help us with specking out some subsequent agendas. Alexis.
Yes, I mean, I think that we've talked a lot of our planning and problem solving has surrounded all three of these areas. We've talked a lot about interoperability. We've talked a lot about patient access. We've talked, you know, a lot about all three, privacy and security as well. And so it makes sense to me that might help with some of our framing, because I think folks will find that there will be a big overlap between what we've talked about and those principles. So I think that might be a great help.
Well, and it's one of the things I was thinking about is in the report, you know, do we take a simple approach of saying, here's what we did and walk through the sequence? We talked about this, then we talked about this, or is, you know, and so we get prior auth and then we get to the broader intersection conversation. Should they be sequenced, or is it really that the framing is around these categories, these big pillars, and that we want to craft a story in our report that maybe uses the prior authorization as sort of the example that we're leveraging, but that ultimately our guiding principles, our ideal state, and our corresponding recommendations really are about the broader conversation in the end. And so that maybe there is sort of this straightforward glide path of our report that's sort of beyond the normal, this is what our charge was, this is who played, this was our process, that there is sort of this, you know, we're trying to get to this end state to reduce burden, improve the system. We know, you know, we needed a way to think about this convergence conversation. So we looked at prior authorization, kind of had some experiences, you know, or we came up with determinations of what we needed to do to fix it as a result of all of our efforts, and that kind of then leads into maybe the end state. So what did you really learn, ICAD Task Force, and what do we need to do next? Messaging to HITACH so they can review those recommendations and decide how they choose to advance them to the national coordinator.
It's definitely a piece of the larger puzzle. You know, when you speak about the broader, guiding principles, in those three pieces that come out of HITACH. So certainly framing it as a parallel and the correlations that we found with prior authorization that fit into all three of those areas makes sense.
Yeah, because one of the things I'm struggling with is this idea that we need to have a prior auth section and we need to have an intersection of clinical and administrative data. It's that we need to really have...
Although I think those also go hand in hand, right?
Right, so why would we have different section on possibly ideal state or guiding principles or recommendations? It's really that I think what we have to do is figure out what were we missing in our prior work because we might have been heads down. And then
I was just going to say that I think all three of what you just said comes together. So I think the background work was our work in ICAD of figuring out ideal state guiding principles to lead to the recommendations. So I think at the end of the day, the recommendations include, right, in one area, not even breaking it down into categories, but are including our recommendation is ideal state and how to get there.
Okay. Thank you.
The guiding principles to get there.
Thank you, Alexis. Denise, I see your hand up.
Hold on, I have to unmute myself. Okay, there I go.
You are.
So when I think about this intersection of clinical and administrative data, and our discussion has been obviously quite heavy on prior authorization, which to me is really a very strong use case that has a need for that intersection of the clinical and administrative data. But as we're looking at it from the three aspects, you know, that the HITACH is focused on from the 21st Century Cures Act around interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access, you know, I think we do have to raise it up a level and discuss that in our report in terms of, you know, the future state. Well, if you look at the present state as a patient, you know, I have to go to my provider to get my clinical data and then marry it up with what's happened on the payer side in terms of what's been paid and not paid. And wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to do that in the future, that there was an intersection of the data about me across the payer and the provider side? You know, I don't know how we're going to get there, but that does play into interoperability. It plays into privacy and security and choice by the patient on what they do want blended together and available to them. I think that's more umbrella than prior authorization, which is around a very specific need.
Thank you. I feel like that's affirming that we're creating a lens to help us make that pivot in our discussion, and we've effectively got the next month to walk ourselves through the broader conversation at the higher level using those three lenses. And then I think we've already got some background, the prior authorization work that we can then as we're synthesizing, think about how these all fit together, and then we can pull into the report. Are there other comments on this proposed approach? I'm Okay, hearing and seeing none. I appreciate the feedback. This will help us with some prep work. We are scheduled for public comment at 4:20, but I think that I'm not seeing any comments or hands raised at this point. So Lauren, would it be acceptable for us to advance to public comment early?
Sure thing. And we'll just ask the operator to open the line, please.
If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for a moment to poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay. We'll leave the line up. So I think that while we wait to see if any further comments come in, I'm just going to, you can leave the slide there, but suggesting that next week, based upon our agenda, we'll do the pivot to convergence of clinical administrative data deep dive. We'll do some work to prepare for that and help with Cheryl's facilitation of that session next Tuesday. That will also be informed by some additional work that we'll do this week with the synthesizing team. So thank you to all those who had volunteered to help with that. August will be all about report writing and creating content for the broader intersection discussion, as we've just discussed several times, all leading us to our September 9th presentation of the draft report and recommendations. With that said, Operator Lauren?
I don't think so. I don't think there are any other comments.
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Well, I would like to get everybody back 15 minutes of their day. Any objections? I love being on mute. Okay, I'm going to take silence as endorsement that you'd all like to get back 15 minutes of your day. Thank you, Rich and Gus, for responding, and I hope everyone stays safe, stays healthy, and stays cool amidst these dog days of summer. Take care, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.